One, two, three, Natalie!
Hi, and welcome to the Person Natalie podcast. I'm your host, Natalie. Today's special guest is Amanda Brown. Amanda Brown is the executive director of the National Women's Business Council. In this role, she works on economic issues facing women entrepreneurs. Amanda and I were lucky to cross paths at Dartmouth, and 2 days after we graduated, she joined the Obama campaign, organizing in several states during the primary season. She moved to the Chicago headquarters for the general election, serving as the body woman for the president's sisters, among other roles. Amanda has worked in the Obama administration through 2011. She left the administration for Rock the Vote, and as the national political director of Rock the Vote, she oversaw the organization's civic engagement program and led the voter registration modernization advocacy efforts. Amanda is a 2014 Forbes 30 Under 30 recipient in the law and public policy field. So Amanda, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Great. So I guess we'll start kind of from the beginning of your awesome career. I'm curious, how did you get your start in the Obama administration?
Really good question. It actually goes back to sophomore year at Dartmouth. Malaya Willis-Starbuck was my best friend at Dartmouth. And she passed away our sophomore summer. She was shot and killed in Berkeley. And I didn't really know how to deal with those, all of the emotions. Mm. Dartmouth was very good about supporting us through that. But I still was dropping out of the two classes I had during sophomore summer, right? Quite traumatic. And I basically decided that I was I need to go do something productive. My parents also, who were you cannot fail at Dartmouth. You need to find some way to turn this into something positive.
Yeah.
And so I ended up, I was I'm going to go to D.C. and I'm going to get guns off the street, because she was shot and killed by, a fluke accident, basically. And so I was there should be no more guns. So I applied to work for the Brady campaign, got an internship, and then applied for Rocky funding and got the money and moved to D.C. And you don't get that much money. So I moved in with my grandparents who live in Albany, Maryland. And was going to commute every day to go work at the Brady campaign. And then the internship fell through literally 4 days before I was supposed to start. And so then I was in a total scramble because I had already taken the off term. So it's not I could go back to school. I had moved to D.C. and was at this point already living with my grandparents. So I applied essentially to every single internship on the Hill. And luckily got accepted by Barack Obama, who at that point had just, he literally had been in the Senate for 8 months at that point. He didn't even have his solid office. When I started as an intern, he was moving from the basement office that you get into his real office. And so I interned there for the summer, and then I had you're doing nothing glamorous as a congressional intern. So you're sorting a lot of mail and answering a lot of phone calls. So I went back, and I think having seen a lot of the gridlock in D.C., I was convinced that I needed to go to law school, because that's how you create change. Mm. So I went back, got on the path to go to law school, studying for the LSAT, and got accepted to the University of Chicago. Mm. So I was really excited because there are a lot of Dartmouth people also going to UChicago. This is great. It's you move from one bubble to another. So excited, and feels very safe. And I think at that time, I was particularly type A, so it was felt very good to just have a next step, not necessarily I had thought about the next step. So I graduated, leaving Hanover is one of the most traumatic things ever. I cried.
Totally agree. Yeah. I was the same way. Oh my gosh.
I basically cried the entire graduation ceremony, to the point where my dad had to come join me to walk the recession, because I just couldn't even do it. So I moved to Chicago. At this point, I moved in with another family member, my aunt and my uncle. They were basically you can stay here for the summer. I was going to go to Chicago, so I just needed a place to stay for the summer. And they were yeah, sure, you can stay here for free. We have one favor. Can you plan a party? We're hosting a fundraiser here for Barack Obama. Can you just deal with all the logistics of that? We don't want to deal with it. And I was okay, fine.
Yeah.
And awesome, right?
Yeah, totally. So
it's 2 days out, and he comes to the fundraiser. There are literally 50 people there. It's in Chicago, so, it's quite the scene of people as well. And he looks at me and is like, I remember you. And I was like, yes. And he's like, I don't know your name, but I know you were an intern. And I was like, that is enough for me.
Yeah.
My name's Amanda. And I was like really excited to say, I'm going to UChicago. Like, where should I eat on campus? Or like, where's the best place to study late night? Or like, get, you know, the inside scoop on UChicago. And instead, he was like, you know, I think you should just go work for me. Like, law school can wait. And I was like, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Let me get back to you about that. And literally a week later, I moved to Las Vegas to work on the campaign, which is insane. So I moved to Nevada. I basically assumed that I would be there for like through that caucus and then have to find a new job before I go back to law school in like 1 year from then. And I like did not know that on campaigns you go from state to state to state and winning. So I had like zero idea what I was like getting myself into. But it totally changed my life and like set me on the course that I've been on for the last 8 years, which is also crazy to think about. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, I didn't know that it started off with passing of Malia.
Yeah.
So I actually have experienced a death of my own. My cousin, she passed away and I was living in D.C. at the time. And I think there's nothing like going through early death that really makes you grow up fast.
Totally.
And it really makes you evaluate what's important. And it just brings this totally different life perspective that I don't think any other experience can quite do.
Totally. And I feel like, you know, I definitely never would have ever imagined that I would be doing what I'm doing now, even when I started at school at college. And one of the things that I so value in Malia and, you know, the friendship that we had and like the times that we shared was just that she always pushed me and like challenged me to find my voice and to own my opinions and to act on them and stand up for what I believe in. And I remember like so many late night conversations and, you know, we'd be like sitting in a room and there'd be a lot of us and she'd like nudge me to speak up or things like that. And I'd go back to all those moments where she definitely helped me find my voice. And so there are times, you know, when you have those bracelets that are like, what would Jesus do?
Or
I'm always like, what would Malia do? Oh. And like, those are the things where I will definitely go back to channel her. She just was like the strongest person I knew and like the most outspoken, even literally she died being outspoken.
Yeah.
And so when I think about that, it's like I have to kind of honor that. I think that there, you know, it's definitely has guided a lot of the work that I am doing.
Yeah. Actually, NPR ran a story about her.
Yeah. And her dad.
Yeah. And her dad. And I actually have a list of podcast episodes that are like very special to me and kind of serve as reminders of why I'm doing what I'm doing here. And there's only actually like three in there. And that is one of them.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I heard it, I just like cried. And it's such a gut-wrenching story.
No, definitely.
All right, so you were on the campaign trail for a while. Do you have any favorite memories from there? a lot of sleepless nights.
I know, a lot of sleepless nights. So I was in Nevada for I moved there basically the end of June of 2007. And Nevada, it was the first time that it was an early state. And so for most people in Nevada, they had like never voted before or like, because it didn't matter by the time it would be by the time Nevada would vote. And so a lot of the work that we did was focused on like educating people how to actually caucus. And I think, you know, you're thrown into this situation where my first day, literally, I had no idea what to expect.
Yeah.
And my parents, I think that they were always politically engaged, right? But they had no understanding of how politics work or like campaigns. So they were like, you need to wear a suit on your first day and, you know, I'll bring copies of your resume and have your notebook. And so I walk in to this giant like labor, you know, union warehouse.
Uh-huh.
Everyone looks like they either are like going to the club that night or like just like come home from one, right? It's Nevada.
Yeah.
And I'm so like the odd one out because I'm now wearing this, like, I was wearing a pantsuit too, you know? Like, I'm like, this is so awkward. And everyone had, there was like a good group of people that had already been on the ground for at least a couple of weeks at that point. And so this was the first day for like 10 of us. And it was the most uncomfortable situation, but I did find my best friend because she also started the same day and was in the very similar situation. And it's like both of our eyes that were totally like deer in headlights, you know, just locked and found each other. Uh-huh. And so we immediately sat next to each other and were like probably very much judged by everyone else in the room. And we were doing the same amount of judging back.
Yeah.
But, like, formed the most solid friendship ever. And she has been my best friend ever since. So I had had in Nevada, you spend a lot of time working, but then you obviously need to do some refueling as well. So I have many good memories. One of them actually, so for New Year's, so this is now like the Nevada caucus was January 19th. Uh-huh. So they didn't actually want to send anybody home for Christmas. Like, we got to go home for Thanksgiving, but we had to stay in town for Christmas. And then on New Year's, it was like any other day. And so they were like, everyone has to be at work at 8 a.m. Like, sorry. And I remember thinking, like, there is no way in hell that I am not. Like, I live in Las Vegas. I am going out on New Year's.
Yeah.
I'm also, you know, 22 or like not even, you know. So I'm like, no way. Nobody can, you know, end my New Year's. And I ended up, two Dartmouth friends actually came to celebrate New Year's with me. And it was, we had like this great night. So much fun. Lots of dancing. And then I had to be at work at 8 a.m. And we literally, I like got in a, I remember like the cab line was so long at mm-hmm. the end of the night.
Ugh, yeah.
Yeah, like it's just like epic. And I was like, I have to be at work in 45 minutes. Like, this is not acceptable. And so yeah, I like remember looking at the cab line and then seeing, this is like pre-Uber, right? So I like remember seeing all these limos. And I'm like, my parents would definitely want me to be at work on time. So like, I just need to get a limo right now.
Yeah.
and I was like, I'll just, you know, charge it to my parents because they would value me being a good person and getting to work on time.
Yeah.
So I got us a limo and I had left my car at the office the day before and go get into the car, find my J. Crew sweater, put that over the dress that I wore to the club the night before and walk into the office like it's all good. And luckily I had some friends that were in a similar situation, but it was probably like the most mortifying thing ever.
Yeah.
I did make it and I did also have a very good New Year, so that was good. And then let's see, other memories. So then when I moved to Chicago for the general election. So fast forward now, like, you know, it's like August at this point, and I had whooping cough.
Oh no.
Yeah. So the sleepless nights, my body did not respond appropriately to those. But so I developed whooping cough, which I had literally from August until November when I could actually go see a doctor. And I like didn't have any time to go see a doctor. So I was essentially at this point, like rationing my contact lenses, you know?
Yeah.
And I would like sleep with them. Like if I did go to sleep and, you know, I'd be like, well, this one I've had, you know, I can make it go another 2 weeks or whatever. So I look like a crazy person. Like my eyes are all red and I'm coughing like a crazy person.
Mm.
And this one night I'm working super late and I was living now again with my aunt and uncle back in their apartment. So I remember getting a cab from the campaign office. I look like a crazy person, like have not slept. Like they're lucky if I brush my hair, you know, it's like a rough scene. And I'm hacking up my lungs. And so I get in the car and the cab driver is just like, so what shift are you coming off of? And I was like, I am not a shift girl. And like totally freaked out on him, started hysterically crying. And he's like, okay, like, can you tell me what address to take you to? And I was like, oh my God. So that was probably the ultimate low on the camp.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, many highs and lows, but
yeah,
you make some of the best friends. I think one of the things that I think about a lot actually is the campaign for me is almost like a second Dartmouth.
Mm.
So Dartmouth, like super loyal alumni, like just like your connections, the relationships that you build in those 4 years, like those are your best friends.
Totally.
And it's because you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like you're, you know, again, they're like highs and lows.
Yes.
Like who wants, you know, you're studying so much, you're working so hard. And it's also like the first time that you're on your own.
Yeah.
And I feel like that experience that you share with people over the course of those 4 years is so memorable and like just means so much.
Yes.
And for me, the campaign was almost like another version of that. Mm. Because that is a shared experience that I will have a very core group of people that were particularly of the people that were on in the early states. There are all of 300 of us, right? Mm-hmm. That were like the ones that were there on day one. And I'm like late to the party, having started in June of 07. Mm-hmm. And so I think that those relationships will just stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. It was one of those moments too, where, so I married somebody that's from the campaign.
So how did you guys meet exactly on the campaign?
Good question. Oh man, he's going to really love this. And I really cannot wait for our children to hear this. So I hated him.
Really?
Yeah. We actually never really met until DC. It's like a small group. It's like, you know, like the incestuous, like very small, everyone knows each other thing happening. So I would run into him all the time.
I see.
So, you know, fast forward a little bit of time, and he is sharing an office at the White House with my closest friend, my closest girlfriend. And I remember she also hated him, had the same kind of response to him. And so we kind of like went, you know, she called me and like complained, like, oh, Kyle just got put in my office. Can you believe this? And I'm like, and over the course of time, things totally changed. And then, like, all of a sudden, they were really good friends. And looking back on it, obviously, there was something going
right,
on.
Something, right,
like,
right.
My dad, I feel like, my dad gave some remarks at our wedding. And it was very much like, you can never have that deep of a hatred if it's love, right? Yeah. And whatever. I just didn't realize it. So my friend Darian had this epic year. She's had, like, the epic past couple of years with a lot of milestones happening in a short period of time. So mm-hmm. It was her birthday. She got engaged. They decided to get married. 8 months later, they moved to Chicago and they found out they were pregnant like 2 days after the wedding. So it's just like, for her friends, a lot of celebrating.
Yeah.
And being the closest friend here in DC, and then Kyle being basically her like work husband, we were forced in these situations to like plan all of the celebrations for her together.
Got it.
And so through that, we just started spending a lot more time together. And that just like led to us having a really great friendship. So we probably spent like a year just being really, really good friends to the point where like, you know, we'd both like have, like we would debrief all of our weekends, like on Sundays together. It was like Sunday dinner, the two of us at Chopped or something, just like debriefing stuff. But yeah. It was like this very deep and close friendship. And then at her wedding, so she got married in Miami and had this beautiful, like crazy wedding. She also married one of her other friends.
Oh, okay.
Like a lot. Yeah. So yeah. It's like a very also like campaign wedding happening. And so I remember I was in Miami and I was a bridesmaid, so I went down a little bit early. And right before I went down, we had our first kiss. And I was like, oh man, what is going on? So then I like go down to the wedding and like all stressed out. And then he showed up, and so they got married on Fisher Island, which is like this remote place in Miami, basically. You can only get on or off the island by like private boat or like personal yacht. Like there's no way to get on the island unless they want you there.
Okay.
And so,
can't escape.
Yeah. So can't escape either. But we had like somehow the first night ended up being on this beautiful beach by ourselves, like just having a conversation. And so that was the first time where we were like, okay, we both like each other. Like, let's figure this out. And then, you know, 2 days later, it's the wedding. And then we flew home together. And I remember, so like 2 days later, we're at home. It is now, it's like now the Wednesday or Thursday. And he looks at me and is like, so I have this thing to tell you. I'm like, okay, like go for it.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, never mind. I'm like, what the hell?
You can't do that. Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah,
I agree.
Like,
yeah.
Absolutely unacceptable. So and I'm like, you have to tell me, pestering him. He's like, but if I tell you, you're going to totally freak out and I don't want you to freak out. And I was like, okay, well, what if I promise to not freak out? And he's like, you cannot do that, but okay. So he's like going along with me. And then he's like, you're just the kind of girl that I could marry. And I freaked out. like totally freaked out. And then we eventually got back hashed out the conversation, which turned into being like, hey, this is a real thing.
Yeah.
I would say it was probably like a month later. And this is, I always mess this up because I like never, we don't really have a good like anniversary because I don't remember those things. And so we made one up, which is this one time we were in an Uber going to a friend's birthday party. It was pouring rain and we were like stuck in this Uber for a very long time. And we both pretty much said, I love you at the like exact same moment. And so we would always say that was our anniversary.
Oh, wow.
And I like actually don't even remember the date. Sometime in October.
What have you learned about yourself from your relationship with Kyle?
Probably that I'm more judgmental than I would want to be.
Really?
He is like one of those people that just sees the good in all, which is one of the reasons that I love him.
Yeah.
He's like definitely helped me be a better person in that regard. So that's probably, that is one thing. I think I never really knew how to like put a name on it before, but I am very family oriented and like just grew up in a really close family. And I also have family that's very local. It's so great to have them close. And so he too has like, his family's also close, but has this like deep, deep value of family. And so it's nice to be able to share that with him. But he also like helped me understand the fact that that does mean so much to me. Mm. He also, I would say I like to hash things out probably more than is necessary, but I like need somebody to vent with and also like be empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably don't need as much of that as I think that I do,
mm-hmm.
So he's helped me also like realize that I can be a confident person, more confident. He's helped me find that a little bit more. And there are many moments I've found myself having more recently where I've had to, you know, like the big girl panty days. And he's been helpful in terms of helping me get prepared for those moments.
Cool.
Being like, you can do it.
Do you ever have like a favorite moment with Obama or Michelle or Biden?
Yeah. I mean, my Barack Obama moment is definitely when he was like, I don't remember you, but I don't remember your name, but you're an intern. One of the other memories for inauguration, because I had worked so closely with the president's sister, Maya, I got to know a lot of the like friends and family of the Obamas. And so I had the lovely task for the inauguration of basically delegating all of the tickets out to the friends and family group, which meant that I had to break a lot of hearts of like the eighth cousin that like the president didn't even know that he had.
Yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then also like was forced into these awkward situations with, you know, their like closer friends being like, I'm the best friend, and me having to like kind of reset that a little bit. But I did have the lucky experience then of like going through my inauguration experience was theirs because I was basically a part of the family manifest for the whole weekend. So I got to see it from this very like personal perspective, which was awesome. First Lady's birthday is like right in January. So it's right before inauguration. And this is when they were still staying at the Blair House before they could move into the White House. And so they had this big party and, you know, their friends are like Oprah. So they had a lot of awesome people at this party. And they're also very family oriented. So there are a lot of kids at the party too. And so they needed a babysitter, right? And so I was like, crap, like how I can't juggle all this stuff. And I don't have a babysitter. And I think, so like as an organizer, you just are like, your nature is to problem solve and to figure it out. And so I was like, okay, great. You need a babysitter? I'm going to call my sister. She can babysit. I've seen her do it before. She's awesome. Like, great. She meets all the qualifications. Like, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
I don't know. But so I signed my little sister up to babysit. So we're both at the Blair House at night. My sister is hanging out with Sasha and Malia and all their closest little girlfriends. And my sister's loving it.
Yeah.
And so then, like, inauguration happens. My family was still living in Georgia at the time. And so my mom is one of her other things. She's like a real morning person. And so she naturally booked my family on like the earliest flight out of DC that day, like the next day after inauguration. So they arrive in Atlanta and there are all these camera crews because the cool thing for the news is to catch people coming back from DC, the inauguration of the first Black man. Like, we've got to hear from them and talk about their experiences. And so my mom and my sister and my dad get off the plane and they somehow get picked by the news crew for an interview. And my sister is like, oh, it was so great. I got to hang out with Sasha and Malia. And I was like, really, so off message. So off message. But so that was a very funny moment. Yeah. And then I would say, oh, actually, a really good Joe Biden story. Yeah. So Kyle and I, we got married in the Catholic Church, and you can like put forth your own special prayers. And usually they're like for health and happiness and like world peace and things like that.
Yeah.
So it only made sense for Kyle and I to add in a special prayer for Barack Obama and Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And for Joe Biden, it was like, we hope that you will continue the legacy for at least 4 more years.
Mm-hmm.
But the first date that we had right after the wedding was the vice president always has the Violence Against Women Act anniversary celebration at his residence.
Mm.
And so Kyle, he runs the sexual assault campaign for the White House, so got invited. And neither one of us had ever been to the Naval Observatory. You've been to a number of different things at the White House, but we've never been there. And so it's really nice to like be invited as a real guest and not a staffer.
Yeah.
And so we like got all dressed up. This is literally 24 hours after we got married, like our first date as a married couple. And we go to the residence. He has his formal presentation about the significance of the event and then does a photo line. And so Kyle and I wait for this photo line, and we have a number of friends that work in the vice president's office. So they were ready to like queue it up, like these two just got married or whatever.
Mm.
So we make it to the line, and I like whisper in his ear, I'm like, we just had a special prayer for you at our wedding. And he's like, no, you didn't. Tell me what it is. So now I'm like literally like recounting the prayer to him, like whispering in his ear. Meanwhile, they're snapping all these photos, and then we take the picture, a very funny picture, but I was very excited to make the connection that we had prayed for him.
So what is it about Barack Obama and Joe Biden that you're so drawn to?
I feel like it's just, it is kind of that sense of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
I think in politics, it is so easy to get jaded and like so easy to just make decisions based on money or your inside circle or those relationships, as opposed to acting for the people,
mm-hmm.
and like always keeping the people first. And I think both of those two are so loyal to like the reason that they are in office,
mm-hmm.
is to make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And they like don't lose sight of that, even though their resumes kind of tell a different story of them, you know, like holding elected office for so long. So like you would think that they'd be different, but when you sit down and have a conversation with them, you feel like you're the number one person. They like make you feel like you are important.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so easy for a politician to forget that or lose that part of the job, and they don't. And
mm-hmm.
it really stands out.
Mm-hmm.
And you just like trust them. You like, I feel totally confident putting my future and my children's future in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going back to like the overall theme of family, have you been able to see how they interact with their families and kind of their family values?
Oh, yeah. Which is so great. I mean, the Bidens, they're like the most loyal family.
Mm.
It's really beautiful to watch. And one of the things, so we had this epic photo line to wait in when we were there. And throughout their house, they'll make like photo books from every vacation or every event together. And so you're just like looking through. And they value it so much. And I mean, you can see that too. I mean, that's literally probably why he didn't run, right?
Yeah.
Like, because he's putting his family first in that regard. And to lose your son and to have gone through so much tragedy like that, family comes first in you. He is such a rock for that family that like that is his duty and that is his responsibility. And I think it's really a beautiful thing to see like how they all come together for whenever there's any moment. Like, when the Bidens come through, there are like 30 of them, you know, like they do not try. It's like never two. It's, there are so many of them, and they're all just like beautiful, like on the inside and out people. And then the Obamas, I mean, I think that you see it and you hear it and how the first lady will go on, and for her, it's like making sure that the girls have a normal life. Like
mm-hmm.
that is her responsibility. She takes that very seriously. She moved her own mom into the White House, and like, she's so protective of that and of that, like takes that role so seriously. And the president, you know, how he spends his time, like he finds ways to have quality time with those girls. And
mm-hmm.
I think that also is like what keeps them in touch with reality,
mm-hmm.
right? Like when you don't do that, and you're, I think a lot of politicians will just like live on airplanes and like on their Blackberries and amongst their staff. Mm-hmm. And like that becomes their reality as opposed to their family. And then you like don't understand what's actually happening.
Right.
Or, you know, and they, I think, bring just a different perspective to the issues. And I actually think it's really interesting to like look at the president and his, how his positions have evolved on certain things, or like, I mean, the vice president too, right? Like his advocacy for women, like he has so many strong women around him. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is a reflection of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like the president, even with like gay marriage, like raising daughters and having conversations with them and having like them questioning you on like what that means, like actually, dad, they're not any different,
yeah,
right? Like,
right.
Or questioning, like, why wouldn't they be able to get married, dad?
Yeah.
Like, putting that back on them, I think, is makes them better politicians.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. I think an interesting topic that you brought up is this issue of family.
Mm-hmm.
I thought what was interesting about the New Year's story is that, you know, your parents kind of taught you, like, you have to be at work and you have to be on time.
Yeah.
And my parents are exactly the
so
same
true.
Way. Yeah. Is there anything else that you could share that your parents have taught you about life and how you live
yeah.
your life?
Yeah. My mom is one of those women that she's like the total extrovert and is like, she taught me, I would say the two things that always just like ring when I think about my mom are, one, never let anyone rain on your parade. She's like a funny girl fan, but that is very true for her. And the other thing that she'll tell me too is like, if you get a no, like, you just need to ask the question differently, or, you know, like rephrase it or find some way to get to the yes. Like, you should never accept no. That's never the answer. And I recently had to modify that because Kyle runs the It's On Us campaign at the White House, which is all about sexual assault prevention. So it's like, it's never a no unless it is a no. You know? But in other situations. So those are the two things that I have gotten from my mom, which have been so helpful. I think she also just has always been a really strong woman in my life. And so like she worked my entire life. And so I got a lot of that work ethic from her. But I think just like the presence that she had and the visibility as a like very strong woman really rings for me when I think about my mom. But then my dad, he has a really strong party button, but he is like such an introvert and he's just like too smart. He's like on a different level. So I like value that in him. I probably relate to that a lot. I'm definitely an introvert in the sense that I like get energy from being alone. But one of the things that always, when I like think about my dad, he used to do this thing where he would apologize to my sister and I, like for what his generation did to like hurt our generation. And there are like a couple of birthdays where I would get handwritten letters from him just being like, I'm so sorry that you will have no retirement. Or like, I'm so sorry that like the stock market crashed and like, you know, people don't know how to handle money responsibly. I'm so sorry that the budget, like we just can't balance it and you will not see any benefits, you know, later on. And those are things that at the time I had no idea what he was talking about. And now that I'm in the work, it's so different. And I'm like, man, my dad was like so, you know, so forward thinking. But I think he also kind of inspired in me that our generation was really different.
Mm-hmm.
And our generation is the generation to like bring change. And I remember literally this is like 10 years ago, he had this idea to talk to millennials and engage millennials in a conversation series, which is like, fast forward, now you'd call it a podcast, right? It did not have a name at the time, but he was just like very focused on the millennial generation and the, I don't know, like instilled in me and my sister really this like sense of change, sense of possibility, which is not unique to us, but I feel like it is very much a part of our generation in terms of how we approach things, but also allowed, like called things out for me to focus on. And so he's like quirky, but like was always forward thinking and gave me a sense of like real power and also like agency to fix things, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And going back a little bit about your experience, you had so many awesome jobs and interesting career paths. What's been the most rewarding job that you've had so far?
Well, I think I would say I have had a lot of jobs. My mom would be like, shame on you for having a new job every single year. You know, like, come on, Amanda, can you just stay in one job for more than 2 years? And like, you just don't understand, Mom. Yeah. But I think one of the things that it's probably just consistent with how I choose jobs is I need to be connected to the purpose. Mm. I need to feel like I am doing purpose-driven work. It's basically my like number one criteria. It's interesting because my last job transition was really the first time that I ever took ownership of like what I want to do. When you are on the campaign, they're like, go to the next state. When you move from the campaign to the governing time, you take whatever job you can get, right? Yeah. Because that's better than being homeless and like living at my grandparents' house. And so I felt like I would take a job and like then a new opportunity would open for me specifically. And so you just go into that. And I never really like had to think about it. It's just like you just do, or somebody's making a way for you, or like you see an opportunity and you go that way. In a way where you're not at all thinking about like, well, how will this help me get to my 5-year goal or my 10-year goal? Like, it was never strategic. It's like, I need a paycheck and like, this sounds cool and I can get it, right? Yeah. And so this last career switch, so I like got passed up for this opportunity at Rock the Boat. I really wanted to be the ED and I didn't get the job. And it's one of those moments that really stands out for me as like, I need to voice what I want and I need to own mm-hmm. what I want. And mm-hmm. nobody's ever going to be a better advocate for myself than me. Right.
Totally.
That was a hard lesson to learn, but I'm very glad that I learned it. And I remember I got passed up for it and I then quit. And I remember sitting down to coffee with the executive director and just being like, you know, I have to leave because there's not an opportunity for growth for me here. Mm-hmm. And I wanted this position and I'm not getting it. And I wanted to be the executive director. And she was like, I wish you would have told me because then I could have helped grow you into that role. Mm. And so it was a very hard lesson to learn. But and then quitting my job without a new job has also did not make my parents particularly happy. But I think gave me like the freedom to actually take a step back and figure out what it is that I want.
Yeah.
And so I set 3 very like strict criteria for myself, which was I want to make more money. I want to be able to, at that time, I was like, I need work-life balance, which now is like so ridiculous. I, like, what was I even thinking? And then the third one was that I wanted to manage people because I felt I internalized getting looked over for this position as like, you don't have real management experience. So I was like, I never want that to happen again. So those 3 things though helped me like figure out and basically like weed out things that were on the list of opportunity. Because I am one of those people that can like rationalize the hell out of anything, right? Mm-hmm. If it's like, even if it was going to be like a 20% like pay cut, I'd be like, well, it's a good job, yeah. you know, or like whatever. Yeah. And it's like, no, I don't like, you don't have to do those things.
Yeah.
And so it was helpful in that regard. And now I'm in this awesome position. I think, you know, I was up against, I want to say like 8 women that were all older than 45 years old interviewing for this job.
Yeah.
And I remember having like a very serious back and forth with the woman that was making the decision, the chairwoman of the council, who has worked on Wall Street for 30 years and is, you know, one of those just like fierce, strong women too. And it was one of the most intimidating interviews that I've ever had in my entire life. But like, I remember just having to also like prove that even though I'm young, I can do this job. And it's been amazing because I think, you know, the council is this like weird kind of entity within the government where we're charged with being an advisory council and we conduct research. And so there are a number, like as a research institution, it's so easy just to make copies of white papers and have them stacked around the office. But unless you're, and I'm stealing this line from the president, organizing for action, nothing will ever change,
yeah.
right? And so I've come into this role as like a real organizer. I didn't know anything about the issues other than, you know, I had a personal connection because my mom is now a small business owner and is an entrepreneur. So I've, you know, gone through that struggle with her. But I think I've like brought a sense of organizing to the job, which is good and makes it fun. And it's also nice because people are actually care about what I'm working on right now. I think it's also, it would not be fun at all if nobody cared about the advancement of women. Right,
right.
That would make my life hell.
Yeah. Wow. I'm curious, what advice would you give to your 20-year-old self if you could go back 10 years ago? What would you like wish you had known? What would you want to impart onto a 20-year-old? Yeah.
Okay, definitely don't sweat the small stuff because I have a real tendency to do that. I think I would say enjoy the experience. You know, there are highs and lows in life, and you need to understand that with every single low and every single high, like, there's something to learn from those moments. And so, but also to really, like, appreciate them and enjoy those moments would definitely be on the list of things that would have benefited me. I think I would probably also tell myself to be more selective with boys.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, never settle. That would be a big thing. And listen to people around you. Like, you trust people for a reason. And so, you know, when you're asking for people's opinions about boys, you should listen to that too. That would definitely be one thing. And the other, I think it's just mostly like, have faith in yourself. I learned, I would say too late, that like, I am the best advocate for myself. And I have, you know, you like work to find mentors and you work to find sponsors. But at the end of the day, like, if you don't believe in yourself, you cannot expect anybody else to.
Yeah.
And I think that would have also been really helpful to know earlier.
What did you get into the most trouble for when you were young?
I was a very good kid. I was a super anal kid. Like, I would come home every single day, go to the kitchen table, do my homework, eat dinner, like, go to ballet, and then go to bed. Like, it was very much on a schedule. And I remember we actually had an au pair at one point. She'd be like, let's go to the movies. And I would be like, it's a school night, Lisa. We cannot go to the movies. And both my parents like would work late or travel for work. And so I had many times where I would actually have to call my mom at like 7:30 on a school night and be like, do you believe her? Like, she wants to take us to the movies. Mom, I tried to tell her that it's a school night and I cannot go to the movies, but she won't. Like, she's making us go to the movies. I don't accept this. Like, I was that kid. So I was like, worked my butt off, was, you know, at the top of my class. And my senior year in high school, like, things just didn't matter anymore. You know, like, you get to a place where, like, you've taken every class that you need, you've gotten accepted into college, like, it just kind of doesn't matter. And I was friends with all the teachers and the administrators. So on the days that I just didn't feel like waking up for school in the morning, like, I didn't go. And once I got my car, I also, and like, had a license, I had one of those situations, like, during lunch, we had a school where it was like A, B, C, and D periods. And so your fourth period was actually 2 hours long, but you would like rotate for lunch in a study hall. And so my real class during this time was an independent study. So lots of air quotes here, right? It's not doing anything. And so I essentially had 2 hours every single day for lunch. And at this point, this is so pathetic, like, thinking about all the cool kids went to Wendy's for lunch. So I would go hang out at Wendy's. And my dad at this point was like the stay-at-home dad. And so I had a assigned parking space. And so there would be times when he would, you know, be driving through. We lived in Alpharetta, Georgia, and my car would not be in my assigned parking space. And so then he would like show up at the Wendy's or, you know, show up at the mall, like, looking for me. And that was, I would get into trouble for that.
Oh, that's very funny.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on to the set questions I ask of all my guests.
Yep.
Amanda, I was wondering if you could share a pet peeve of yours.
Okay. Definitely voicemail.
Oh.
I hate voicemail. Like, send me an email, send me a text message. Do not leave me a voicemail because I just won't listen to it. And then I hate too when you finally call the person back and they're like, did you listen to my voicemail? And I'm like, no, I'm just calling you back. Can you just tell me what you need? Like, this is so ridiculous. And I have, you know, like, people, I actually went through and cleaned out my phone the other day of all the voicemails. Like, I don't listen. I just delete, you know, such a waste of time for me. I don't understand it. Like, text me.
Yeah.
Just text me.
What's your favorite chore?
Okay. When I was reading this, I was like, is this a trick question? I don't have a favorite chore. I guess I would say walking the dog.
Oh, okay.
It's like definitely annoying. And I have a dog that like really enjoys the walk as well. So she's not the fastest to pee or anything like that. So we have some extended periods of time together walking. But it's good because she is, I love her. And she's like, she's just a really great dog. Yeah. And so I enjoy that time. I also try to be, hey, like when we first got her, I would always use that time. It's like, oh, I'll call my mom or I'll check my BlackBerry while we're walking or things like that. And I've tried to be better about it recently where like it's actually another time to get to know people in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of everyone's on the same dog walking time. And so she has dog friends and we'll like stop and chat. And I know it's actually funny. Kyle will make fun of me when we're like going, you know, walking through the building, like, oh, hey, how's Barnabas, right? Like, how's Spartacus? And he's like, how do you know these people? I'm like, they're on the dog train. Like, I see them every morning.
And what's the first website you check in the morning?
I go to Instagram first, but maybe that's not necessarily a website. So that is cheating.
Yeah. So that's probably the first app that you check.
Yeah. Then I go to Facebook, which I go to the app, but it counts as a website.
Yeah.
But I find myself either landing on like a Politico article or actually I end up on like HuffPo a lot.
Mm.
Just based on like articles that people have posted is how I will get directed to them most of the time. And then I usually will read like Mike Allen's Politico on the train to work.
Yeah, cool. And then can you tell me about like your morning and evening routines, if you have any rituals or anything like that?
Definitely. So we'll start with morning because my evening is probably more pathetic. In the mornings, I am not a morning person. So I like to wait until the very last minute. I also am not like I don't even own makeup. And so my morning routines are pretty quick. So I also, so I usually am like up. I don't believe in alarm clocks. I hate them. They make my heart palpitate for the whole day.
So you wake up naturally on your own?
Yes. And my husband is the ultimate, he's like the snoozer of all snoozers. So I usually will wake up like 1 or 2 minutes before the alarm will go off just so it's something. Like, my head will just do it. Like, I will ask him at night, what time are you setting the alarm for? And then, like, somehow, by the grace of God, I will wake up 2 minutes before so I do not have to listen to the irritating noise that is the alarm clock. And then I usually will walk the dog first and then we'll get dressed or take a shower. I have a rule for myself where I'm not allowed to get out of the shower until I know what I'm going to wear. Like getting ready is, I don't know, can be like really stressful for me.
Yeah.
Cause you like want, you have different clothes for different days. Like sometimes you've got to wear the big girl suit. Other times you like don't have any outside meetings. So it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And I think having like juggled campaign life and like nonprofit life and work life, my wardrobe is like all over the place.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. At one point in my life, it was acceptable to wear shorts and a t-shirt to work. So the morning struggle is definitely real for me. So I will not get out of the shower until I have a sense of what I'm going to wear. We live literally above the metro. So it's like pretty pathetic for me to not take the metro to work. I actually successfully never Ubered to work. From there, my day is like crazy. I do believe in lists. Like to the point where sometimes on busy days, I will just write down like lunch for the sake of being able to check something off, right? Mm-hmm. Or like sometimes it's literally like mocha. It's so pathetic. Or like bathroom, you know, just for the sake of being able to cross something off. But I will start with making that list once I get to the office. And sometimes on like really stressful days, I will make that list en route to the office. So I know exactly what I need to do once I get in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then evening is like, it doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
It's like, I actually need to do some research on this because I watch like the trashiest TV.
Do
like,
you?
Yeah. Like, so embarrassing. Uh-huh. But yeah, I get made fun of a lot. But it's like the only way that I can zone out.
Mm.
Like, it's like how I turn my brain off.
Yeah.
And I like feel like I've read articles or like heard people say that before. But I need to get the facts so that I can counter all of the like
naysayer.
Yes, yeah. Because Kyle makes fun of me all the time. But so I usually get home. I like have to get home by a certain time to walk the dog. So I've been pretty good about that. And then I'm not a big dinner person. Mm. I'm a big lunch person. Yeah. So by the time I get home, like, I will maybe make dinner for myself if I know that Kyle will be coming home or something like that. Yeah. His schedule is also crazy, so it doesn't always make the most sense. And then I will like either eat or not eat, hang out with the dog, and basically go get in bed and like do more work. Mm. I also enjoy the ability to clean out my inbox at night because it's like the only time I don't have a massive like flow of incoming. Mm-hmm. So it is nice to be able to actually use that time to be productive.
And in honor of my favorite op-ed article, could you share what you think your best resume virtue is and your best eulogy virtue?
Yeah. Okay. So for resume, I'm going to say Dartmouth.
Yeah.
So I have a long history of Dartmouth. My grandfather went there. He graduated in 55. He was at that point, they still had a quota on Black people. So there were 3 allowed per class.
Oh, wow.
So that is crazy. Then my mom was in the 3rd class of women in 1978. I mean, Dartmouth was an amazing 4 years of like learning mostly a lot about myself and just making friendships that will last me for forever. And I am so loyal to Dartmouth. And I feel like with Dartmouth too, you could literally go anywhere in the world and be like, I need a job or I need a place to like, I need a place to live or I just need food. And like, check, check, check. Somebody will take care of you. And there are people everywhere. And I don't think that you have that loyal. A lot of other schools have that same type of loyalty. So that is, I would say, means a lot to me in terms of like the resume sense.
Yeah.
On the eulogy sense. Yes, I would really want to be remembered as just a thoughtful person or like just friend, maybe. I take my friendships really seriously to the point where I've had to recently like name this because I can get really hurt too by friendships because I'm like, if I were that person, this is what I would do.
Yeah.
And I have to like remember that not everyone else is like me.
Yeah.
But I just am so, I don't know, like I will give to the point of like giving beyond what I possibly can or should be giving to others. And I so believe in like making other people feel special or empowered. I'm like a big fan of the unexpected, like small gift or something.
Mm-hmm.
Really try to invest in those. Mm-hmm. It's funny now also having to like take on a new family. I was just talking to a sister. I was like, I just need the birthday list. Like,
yeah.
I don't even know. Like, when his mom's birthday just passed, and I'm like a gift giver. And like, I love cards.
Yeah.
Like,
I save every card I've ever gotten.
Yeah. I hoard them.
Yeah, me too. Like, it's like, since middle school. Yeah. And like, certain people have boxes just for them.
Yeah. It's a real problem. And like, I can spend hours looking for the right card for people.
Yeah.
And so then like having to figure out, okay, I need to get the full list. So I'm always aware of like what's coming up because it's a whole new, you know, it's like 20 new people that I have to take care of now.
Right, yeah. And who is someone famous you would want to listen to this podcast episode?
I would say Kerry Washington. Quite inspired. We actually, so I'm like not ever a good Halloween person. Kyle, I made him dress up as Fitz and I was Olivia.
Oh, that's a good one.
And I was like, yes, benefit to being in a biracial relationship. Now I like have the ultimate Halloween costume and it's so easy because I just need a white coat and you put on a suit. And I have some popcorn and red wine. Like, this is great.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's pretty awesome. There's like the Dartmouth connection there with Shonda.
Oh, right. Yeah, totally.
I am very happy to see like a strong Black woman on TV. Yeah. I don't totally condone all of her actions or how she got there, but it's a good image or like happy to see a Black woman starring in the show.
Yeah.
I feel like others I would want are more on the family level.
Oh, like who?
Like my dad.
Yeah.
Like I've been really blessed to have all my grandparents for most of my life. I just lost my dad's mom earlier this year, actually, and then my Dartmouth grandpa, my pop, in junior year. But I would also want to make sure that they hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's nice when you, I don't know, feel like you're making them proud.
Right. Totally. Yeah.
It's like the one thing that we're supposed to do, right?
Yeah, totally. Well, last question. I was wondering if you have any goals or vision for the future. How do you want your life to kind of shape out, you know, in the next 10 years, 20 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really just want to be happy. I want to be continue to be in a position where I'm able to, like, help or create change or, you know, like doing something that has a real purpose and where I'm able to see the impact that that's having. So whether or not I find that in my work or getting involved in my community or things like that, I definitely want to make sure that I'm doing something that's like oriented. And I guess it's not just about me, but doing something for the greater good is important. And yeah, I think it's like being happy and loved and like being able to love others. Mm-hmm. Like family is really important.
Yeah, great. Well, Amanda, thanks so much for coming on the show today. It's been such a pleasure to have you. I can't wait to see how your life and career shape out. I know that great things are in store.
Hopefully.
And, oh, yeah.
Knock on some wood.
Yeah, we're knocking on wood, yes. But I'm very confident of that. You have great life perspective and just such a warm person. And I think, you know, people very easily see that. So yeah.
This is awesome that you're doing this.
Oh, thanks. It's an honor. It's an honor to have you on the show.
Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining this episode of Personatally with guest Amanda Brown. Hope you all have a fantastic week and join us for next week's episode. And as always, let's talk awesome.